I see it so often. People who claim to be living life to the fullest. I have a neighbor down the street who, when I say, "How you doing?" he says, "Living the dream. Living the dream." I wonder what people mean when they say living the dream. And I wonder how many really are. Even as Christians, we can be deceived to thinking that we're living life to the fullest, even when we're not. I want to be as Paul at the end of his life, who said, "The time of my departure is at hand." He knew he was about to die. He was going to be executed. But he went on to say this, "I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith." That was looking back. Now he looks forward and says, "Henceforth, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge," knowing his judge to be righteous, he is able to say, "A crown of righteousness he has laid up for me. And not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing." That's not what most Christians will be able to say, even those who today may be convicted at the end of this message, convicted to change, but in their own strength go immediately back to the old way. That's typically how things happen. We get under conviction. Even when we're having our devotions, we're challenged by another Christian, or we're challenged by a message or a Sunday school lesson. And, you know, that really convicted me. And then we go right back to what we were doing. Because really, we didn't allow God to get a hold of us and change, make the necessary changes. Moses was an incredible example of one who throughout his life submitted to God. That was a rough beginning. It was a rough introduction there in Exodus chapter 3, where God says, "I want you to go free my people." And he says, "Who am I?" But he eventually submitted himself completely to God, even as we read this morning. Because in the New Testament, some 1,446 years later, it is written of him what we read. And he is one, I believe, lived life to the fullest. Now, you look at his life, you look at what he went through, and you go, "That's living life to the fullest." Well, how many of you wouldn't mind going back and seeing what took place at the Red Sea? How many of you wouldn't mind, without all the hardships that accompany something like this, how many of you would kind of like to see water come out of a rock when you command it to happen by God's power? And there's other examples that could be given. Next Sunday is Mother's Day, and Lord willing, we'll be looking at Hebrews 11:23 that says, "By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they," his parents, "saw that he was a proper child and they were not afraid of the king's commandment." So today I thought I would preach something somewhat introductory by giving the way he turned out. A man who lived life to the fullest. What did that require on his part? Well, it required, and I've put this in participial form, it required refusing, choosing, esteeming, respecting. All words that we saw in this passage that I want us to really note this morning. Go back to Exodus chapter 2, where we read the story of Moses, actually given by Moses himself. He's the author of the book of Exodus, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Old Testament, the first five books of the Bible. So next Sunday we will note verses 1 through 10, but today I want us just to read verses 10 and 11 of Exodus chapter 2. You'll note it says in verse 10, "And the child grew," that's referring to Moses, "and she," that is his mother, Jochebed, "brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son, and she called his name Moses, and she said, because I drew him out of the water." Then you get to verse 11, and that's years later, "And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren, looked upon their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren," and so forth. But between verses 10 and 11 are many years that expire. In verse 11, he's grown, or possibly the word means great. "He became a great man in Egypt." Well, I would sure like to know what happened between verses 10 and 11, wouldn't you? Well, we have a Bible commentary on that. And we have some secular sources, too, that tell us, in some instances, what probably took place between 10 and 11 there in Exodus chapter 2. But let's get the divine commentary first, because we read about this in Acts chapter 7. Go to Acts chapter 7. This is where Stephen is preaching under the Sanhedrin before they stone him, and he lets us know what took place in Moses' life. It says in verse 18, "Another king arose which knew not Joseph. The same king dealt subtly with our kindred, and evil entreated our fathers, so that they cast out their young children to the end they might not live. In which time Moses was born, and was exceeding fair, and nourished up in his father's house 3 months. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son." Now we know all that thus far, but here's what we don't read elsewhere. Verse 22, "And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and deeds." Moses was a man who lived life to the fullest. And I want us to see five things about this man who lived life to the fullest. And the very first thing I want you to see out of Acts chapter 7 and verse 22 was the education of Moses. His education. He was 40 years old in Acts 7:23, and when he was a full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And that's what we read in Exodus. But before then, Acts 7:22, learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. Able to go about freely. Unlike his brethren, the Hebrews, who were slaves, Moses was able to go about freely. He was not being burdened in the slavery like others were, but he was able to look upon the burdens of his brethren. And it said, "She called his name," back there when we were there in Exodus. "She called his name," that is, the daughter of Pharaoh. So he would receive her family name. Now, some believe if the Pharaoh on the throne at this time was Ramses II, and if so, Moses' name in court would be Ramses, but change the E to O, and you've got Ramoses. Ramoses. I read what the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia said. It said this, "To the Oriental mind, a name must mean something. The usual meaning of this royal name was that the child was born of a princess through the intervention of the god Ra." First two letters of Ramses. "But this child was not born of the princess, so falling back upon the primary meaning of the word drawn out, She said, because I drew him out of the water, Moses. Ram Moses. So Pharaoh's daughter, some believe, was the sister to the king on the throne. And so she would be the lineal heir to the crown, but debarred from taking that throne because of her sex. Initially, or instead, she bore the title Pharaoh's daughter. And according to Egyptian custom, retained the right to the crown for her firstborn son. A not improbable tradition. In other words, this is probable according to Josephus, that Jewish historian, relates that she had no natural son and Moses thus became heir to the throne, not with the right to supplant the reigning Pharaoh, but to supersede any of his sons. Moses was set to become the Pharaoh of Egypt. That's one of the things that when you look at some of the movies they make, you can say, okay, they got that one right. Forget a lot of the rest. Thus, he would be educated as a prince. And to that, Stephen refers to when he's preaching the sermon. That he was educated in all the wisdom of Egypt and was powerful in his words and works. He was educated as a prince, and the first part of his education was he was homeschooled. Did you know that Moses was homeschooled? Homeschooled by his real mother. Perhaps until 2 or 3 years of age. He knew not himself to be an Egyptian at the very beginning. Whereas you contrast that to years later when he's 40, and when he flees Egypt, you read about this in Exodus chapter 2 and verse 19, and those ladies who he helps with feeding their flock, they go to their father and said, an Egyptian helped us. He must have looked like an Egyptian. His education as a child began immediately, and no doubt he heard from his real parents how the children of Israel got into Egypt. And no doubt he knew of Joseph, a former ruler in Egypt. And you can read about who Joseph was and what he would have known in Genesis chapter 50, verses 24 and 25. And then he probably went to public school. But he had a foundation with mom and dad. He was homeschooled. And maybe when he was in public school, they took field trips. And they went to the tomb of Joseph, perhaps. And they learned of Joseph in Egyptian history. Maybe, maybe not. Because by the time you get to the Egyptian pharaoh, he knew nothing of Joseph. But even if he had Egyptian class, he no doubt thought of what his parents had taught him, even as a 2 to 3 year old. Do not doubt what takes place in your Sunday school class, Kathy. She has the 2 to 3 year olds. These kids aren't picking up anything. Oh, they're picking it up. They're picking it up. And thank you for teaching. Don't ever doubt what Sunday school teachers are doing. The 2s and 3s, Megan with the 4s and 5s. Class sharing between Kayla with the primaries, 1st, 2nd, 3rd grade. The juniors with Dave. I read this from a commentator. Swimming, horseback riding, hunting, playing with household pets would all be part of the experiences of a young boy in Egypt. Something is even known of the hairstyles of the ancient Egyptians. The head was shaved except for one long lock on the side, which was braided. You've probably seen movies that have that. The distinctive side lock is known from the reliefs, and it was actually found on a mummy, that of a boy about 11 years old. As he grew older, he would have learned to read and write. He would have learned such sports as archery and horseback riding, which were favorite pastimes of a number of the pharaohs of the 18th dynasty. He was educated with great care, Josephus says in his history. Philo, another historian, Jewish historian, states that teachers from various parts of the world instructed Moses in math, geometry, music, hieroglyphics, Egyptian, Greek, and Assyrian wisdom. His education was such that he, according to Stephen, was powerful in his words and in his works. Powerful. You say, well, how does that comport with when he's complaining to God and says, I can't speak? Probably the same way you do it. When God calls you to do something you don't like and say, well, I can't do it. And you make some excuse that God knows not to be true. Because God says, I'm the one who gave you your mouth. Educated. By the way, God does not put a premium on ignorance. We think, well, God always takes the people who are the stupidest, dumbest, most backward, and God uses them. Yeah, if they can't help it. But God also uses men like Moses, Paul. Remember Apollos? Well-educated, and uses the education they got for his glory. But he was also not just mighty in words, but in works. He had everything going for him in this world. He was living life to the fullest. He was living the dream. And yet for all of that, his heart wasn't in it. There's got to be something more. And don't you doubt once that all the people in power and the people who seem to have everything, the Jeff Bezoses, the Zuckerbergs, they're thinking there's got to be something more. We know that's true because even Solomon, who had everything any man could ever want, said, this just isn't satisfying. And yet that's what we all try to do. Although it's been proven in years past that just doesn't satisfy. You think, well, it's that next vehicle I get, it's that house, and we come up with all kinds of things, and one day I'll just be happy if. You'll be happy when you're submitted to God like Moses was. That was it. That's it. Had to be something more. And I'll add this right here. No doubt, due to what his faithful mother instilled in him when he was the little boy. By the way, I'm trying to remember who it was. Lenin? L-E-N-I-N, the first dictator of the Soviet Union, who said, you let me have the children when they're young and I've got them for the rest of their life. So this is where children need to be. But not just in the church, because people, sometimes parents say, well, I'll bring my kids to church and they're going to turn out well. No, they're not. They're going to turn out well, but according to what you do with them at home. Don't leave it up to the church. We're simply trying in a church to build upon what you as a Christian parent ought to be doing at home. So don't expect us to perform miracles here for your child. The education of Moses. Then we see here in Hebrews chapter 11, 24, the renunciation of Moses. It says there in verse 24, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Josephus records that the Pharaoh had no son and neither did his daughter. Thus, it is possible that Moses was in line. He just had to come to age. That's what everybody's waiting for. Finally, when Moses comes to age, and yet we know that when he was come to years, It says there in Hebrews 11:24, when he was come to years, literally when he became great, he refused. And all he had to do was say, yes. And he said, no. He refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Folks, that was the key. Was for him to accept that title, to accept this lineage, to accept the throne. And yet he refused. All he had to do was say yes. But we learn something about his refusal. First part of verse 24, the first two words out loud are, by faith. By faith, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. By faith. When I was in college at Bob Jones, and I was like a junior, and in my society, we played intramural sports where one team would play the other society. And our society's team was good, but just not good enough. And one of the guys on our society said, hey, wait until next year. My little brother's coming. I'm like, so who's your little brother? Well, he's turned down scholarships to play for Indiana. He's coming to Bob Jones? Yeah. He believes the Lord's called him to preach. And he came. And we won the basketball championship. And you know this man, Mark Kittrell, who could have gone on to basketball greatness. If you've ever watched him play, it was a sight to behold. And it's not because he was tall. He was extremely talented. He refused to do what the world thought he should do. He was submitted to God. My own brother played well in high school, Nickerson High School. I was playing football with him, or I should say more, behind him. I was like third string. They would have had a fourth string. I would have been on the fourth string. He was first string, and the coaches loved him. He'd get out on the field. He'd play defense. He was defensive tackle. And he would just bust through the line and nail the quarterback or the halfback who had he was so good. And I remember the day when the coach said, where are you going to go to college? I know you've got some scholarships. And he had a scholarship to go to a nearby college. He said, well, I'm going to, and he named the Bible college he was going to. And the coach was incredulous. You've got to be kidding me. You're going to waste your life? And today he's serving the Lord in Sri Lanka as a missionary. Refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Refused to go the world's way for recognition, popularity. And it was by faith. By the way, that same word refused that you read there in Hebrews 11:24 is used by Jesus Christ himself in Luke 9:23, but it's translated deny. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself. Same word, if you use the same word in Hebrews, let him refuse himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. So Moses turned down power, he turned down position, he turned down wealth, honor, being around celebrities, because he was a celebrity, because he was somebody who was going to be something. And you know what? He would rather be around the people of God rather than to be around celebrities and drop names all the time. That wasn't Moses. And he was most likely to be the one to inherit the throne. And he could have even thought, you know what? I could use my power one day to mitigate the suffering of my people. Have you ever thought of that? Instead, God lets him go to the wilderness for 40 years. He comes back to the guy who took the throne, which he should have had, and he's got to mess with this guy when Moses himself could have been there and could have just said, you people are gone. You can go. But then who would have gotten the glory for that? So we see the education of Moses, the renunciation of Moses. Verse 25 of Hebrews 11, now we see the choosing of Moses. The choosing. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Living the dream, man. I'm living the dream. And most people who say that are choosing to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Moses had a choice, and he made it. And he suffered because of it. You see, he didn't suffer because suffering was thrust upon him. He chose it. And you have a choice. Either to enjoy being with the people of this world. Note verse 25. Moses chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. He could have gone with the popular Egyptian culture. Or he could have gone along with his brethren who were slaves. Could have enjoyed the pleasures of sin. For what? A season. The enjoyment of sin is temporary. By the way, he's a full-grown man when he makes this choice. He's not an impetuous teenager, and neither is he senile. Some believers have trials and afflictions thrust upon them. Moses chose it. And to me, that is something to behold. The education of Moses, the renunciation of Moses, the choosing of Moses. Then we go to the esteeming of Moses. First part of verse 26. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. To him there was something more important than the treasures of Egypt. By the way, the greatest, richest nation on earth at this time was Egypt. He could have had it all. He didn't complain about his choice, though. He actually prized his choice because it says there, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Reproach is having insults heaped upon you. And I want you to note something because this is referring back to the Old Testament. Esteeming the reproach of whom? Greater riches than the treasures in Egypt? Of whom? What's the word used? Esteeming the reproach, the reproach of whom? Christ. Wait a second. He's not born yet. Oh, but he's there. The pre-incarnate Christ is there. Before he even meets Jesus Christ at the burning bush, he esteems the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. What could he be thinking? Mama Jochebed taught him something. Christ in the Old Testament. That really puts us to shame. Because all of this is by faith. He has seen nothing. He hasn't seen the burning bush yet. By faith. Let me get to the last thing I want you to see. It's the respecting of Moses, the last part of verse 26. For he had, maybe you could use the word because there for the word for. Because. In other words, he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt because he had respect unto the recompense of the reward, a reward he has not seen, a reward that he has never had any opportunity to see, and yet it is by faith that he respects unto the recompense of the reward. That word respect is an interesting word, and I've got to share this with you. Because when you see respect, you think, oh, that's somebody who just, oh, man, I really respect you. It literally is translated, it is this word, he kept on looking away. That's the word respect. That's it. He kept on looking away to the reward. Let me quote somebody in their linguistic book that I have. The word was used of keeping one's attention fixed on something as an artist fixes his attention on the object or model he is reproducing in painting or sculpture. That's how this word was used in secular literature, of an artist. I have not seen Rod when he's drawing something, but I can imagine, I don't know, Carol, if you've ever seen this, but I can imagine him as an artist. He's looking at his, I don't know, photo. I know it's not an animal in his backyard. He's a wildlife artist, and his attention is fully on this. He is looking away from everything else, and he's got his focus here so that he can accurately depict here what he sees here. That's the word used for respect. And it means looking away. He did not focus, folks, on what he's left behind, but on what he has gained. And it requires faith. Now, this is true faith. This isn't just somebody who says, well, I've got faith. I believe God's going to take care of me. No, here's somebody who said, God is going to take care of me. And I am looking away from what I've left behind. And I am focusing on the reward that is yet to come. And he's doing this by faith. That recompense of reward. Wages to be rendered, literally. He looked away to the wages that would be rendered. I read this article years ago. It came up on my computer screen once. I get, you know, the news, some kind of a news flash that came up. And in these news items, they had this article. Here's what it was entitled. For happiness, this is a long title. For happiness, sitting in church beats shopping at the mall. You would not agree, I know. I haven't finished the rest of it. A new study suggests that a decline in religious participation and an increase in shopping opportunities could be making us miserable. Secular. This is a secular study. Sometimes I like to go to them because they tell us things. We respect these people. We just jettison the Bible and what the Bible. We already know this. Read the book of Ecclesiastes. Of course it's going to make you miserable. If you think you're going to be happy by going out and shopping, if you think you're going to be happy by running up your credit card bill, you think that's going to make you happy? Oh, it does for a little while. Because some people, even Christians, resort to shopping for happiness. And for a little while, you bring that little item home and you go, look what I found. My wife does it at thrift stores. Look what I found. And she does a good job. Let me read into the article. You ready for this? We could all stand to take a day of rest from commercialism to get some perspective on what makes us truly happy, whether we consider ourselves religious or not. For those who attend them, religious services provide fellowship and often give people a greater sense of meaning to life, says Danny Kohenzada, PhD, assistant professor in the Department of Economics at Ben-Gurion University and lead author of the study. But if attending services makes people happier, why don't people go more regularly or go back if they've stopped going? Kohenzada has a few theories, he says. Foremost among them is simply that shopping provides more immediate gratification. Since immediate satisfaction from shopping is higher than from religious participation, they choose shopping even if they know that in the long run they would be less happy, he says. In addition to this, the addictive nature of shopping helps them to choose the immediate lower satisfaction over the long run higher satisfaction. In the long run, he says, people derive greater satisfaction from religious participation than from shopping. Our work contributes to the idea that money is overrated, and other factors, including religion, tend to be underrated. Moses was not one of those people who would delve himself into the culture and everything that would make you temporarily happy. He had respect. He looked away from all of that unto the recompense of the reward. And folks, we need to start looking away. It goes on to say, I could have extended this message by saying forsaking in verse 20. Seven, by faith he forsook Egypt. And I could have said, by not fearing the king, the wrath of the king. I could have said, by enduring, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover, the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch him. All of these things characterize Moses and why he literally lived the dream. He had everything going for him. And he could have just said yes to Egypt. And he would go down in history as one of those pharaohs we know nothing about. All he had to do was say yes. But he said no. And for you to be temporarily happy, all you have to do is say yes to everything that comes along. And we need to start stopping and saying no to more things. No. No, I refuse. I refuse. No, no, I will not do that. No. He could have lived life to the fullest as far as the world was concerned, but he refused. Had he not refused, he would have been just another Pharaoh. Instead, he was one of the greatest men in the history of the world. What a man of character who can refuse something by faith. By faith. For the sake of eternity. And that's really a good definition of godliness. Because godliness is not only something that is concerned with the life that is now, but of the life which is to come. Indeed, Moses would live life to the fullest. And you may be saying that you are too. Every time you shop, every time you find something that you think, oh, this is going to be it. This is great. And then the next day you're back to where you started, if not lower. Because now what you bought, you got to pay for. And so many other things. Refusing, choosing, esteeming, respecting,